Owen Corporation. Mr. Briggs?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The item number 15 in your agenda is to ask you to consider a draft cleanup abatement order with the end result that we're looking for you to give me direction to issue that cleanup abatement order, either as we proposed it or as might be revised according to your direction on this item. So I have a few preliminary remarks before we launch into presentations. First of all, I want to just briefly give you an outline of a little bit of the most recent timeline, because this is one of the item that has had the most paper flying around, as I mentioned earlier. So September 18th was when we sent out the draft cleanup abatement order, and we provided 45 days of comments, and we said that those comments were due on November 2nd. So November 2nd was our cutoff date for comments. November 19th, we sent out the staff report and the draft cleanup abatement order, where we considered those comments, we provided responses to those comments, and to demonstrate that we take comments seriously, we made changes in response to the comments where we felt those changes were appropriate. The most notable change in the draft cleanup abatement order, I think it's fair to say, was to increase the active remediation requirement to include priority zone B. So that was November 19th. November 28th, because of that change, the two designated parties, those are Olin and the City of Morgan Hill, by their request, asked for some additional time because of the change in the draft. And the chair allowed both Olin and Morgan Hill to comment on changes only until December 3rd at 5 p.m. That was this past Monday. So then in the meantime, on November 30th, which was, I think that was a week ago, supplemental sheet number one, we mailed out supplemental sheet number one, and that's the one that's it says prepared on November 30th, 2007. We addressed some additional comments that we received and responded to those comments, and we, as we said we would do with the November 19th staff report, we said we would clean up the cleanup abatement order to conform with that most recent change. So we included the revised draft cleanup abatement order. And then on, in the meantime, we received the December 3rd submittals. Those were just the ones that were allowed from Olin and Morgan Hill. We then had to determine which ones complied with the chair's ruling, notably that they had to respond strictly to the changes in the cleanup abatement order. And the chair made that ruling. We then sent out the complying letters, you might say, with our most recent second supplemental sheet, which says prepared on December 5th. And it also includes our staff responses to those letters. So that's the second yellow batch that you have here, prepared on December 5th. These latter, let's see, we also received additional letters, well after the deadline. These were just in the last week or so, from Santa Clara County Board of Supervisors, Senator Maldonado, Richard Pakima, and then we got an email transmission of an op-ed piece that Assemblyman Laird prepared. These were all well after the deadline, and so the chair did not allow those into the record. So as far as proceeding now, what the chair has agreed to do is allow City of Morgan Hill an opportunity to briefly state their disagreement with the chair's ruling on excluding those portions of their December 3rd comments that were excluded. Then once we have that squared away, we will launch into the presentations. And I want to outline those so everybody knows what to expect, and so you won't get too antsy if you think someone's going on too long. So the staff presentation is, we are looking at less than 20 minutes for that. The non-designated parties, that would be all other parties other than Olin and the City of Morgan Hill, have 3 minutes. No one asked for more time. Olin is allotted 45 minutes. They actually asked for more, and we cut that back to 45 minutes. City of Morgan Hill asked for in two stages, but a total of 13 minutes. That's what they asked for, and that's what was granted. And so that's the order of events. And so the next step, Mr. Chair, would be to deal with the request by City of Morgan Hill to state their case regarding your ruling.
Okay. Mr. Hawk.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the board, Roger.
And we'll give you 3 minutes.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Well, I will try to do my best in 3 minutes. This is a complex situation. This is supposed to be a public hearing where the public's right to know is at issue and right to make statements to this board. I think Roger outlined generally correctly the history. I won't have to go into that, but I reject this comment that the November 30th CAO cleaned up things. It was a major rewrite in a lot of ways. We submitted a supplemental submittal, and I don't think anyone here read it, because if you did, you would have noticed that many of the sections specifically commented on the changes. And in fact, I find and take issue with the fact that we received information that in writing that people appear, it appeared to be this or appeared to be that, or focused on this or focused on that. Now, I'm a little perplexed because you did see and did change the CAO just recently to include the replacement water section that was left out of 13304. I find that a little amusing. So someone did read some of it, but I don't see that anyone actually read it and don't see that anyone actually noticed all the text that deals with this fundamental changes, particularly the changes that occurred in the finding of background, but the change in the wording on the cleanup level and the inconsistency between a cleanup that was required to 1.4 parts per billion, but then we'll let Olin clean to 6, where they were cleaning by reference to the June 2007 letter. And I also found it peculiar that someone went through the COMEX letter that was sent and performed this cross-out, which looks like something left over from a Cold War disclosure. But nobody had the Sharpie to go through ours, if in fact you think it was not to the point. And it was to the point. Every one of the comments we made in our supplemental comments dealt with the changes to the CAO, the basis for them, and why we did not think those changes were supportable by the facts, supportable by the evidence, or supportable under law. As another example, in the November 30th CAO was the first time that in the CAO reference was made to the US EPA guidelines for monitored natural attenuation. We commented specifically on that. This board doesn't want to hear that. There's something wrong here. This is not right. Now, also, I've been told by Ms. McChesney that we're allowed, and I reread the notice that says we're allowed to make a statement. I take words at their meaning. Statement does not mean orally. Statement can mean in writing. So at the time that we get up to make our statement, I intend, if you don't allow our supplemental submission in now, to offer it then as our statement, as part of our statement, not in its entirety. And there's nothing that precludes us from giving a statement in writing as well as giving oral testimony. No rule, no requirement, nothing. And the last thing I want to comment on is the chair had asked for information specifically regarding the tenant well issue and the tenant well replacement. We briefed for the first time the facts in our supplemental submission about the tenant well replacement. We were never allowed to do that before. But we did provide the chair with information. Apparently, that's been rejected as being part of this record. If the chair had read it, and assume the chair has read it, and the chair has rejected it, then I have a problem with the chair knowing what's in that detail that we may be discussing today, but the rest of the board doesn't. That's a little inconsistent with public policy, and it's a little inconsistent with how this board should operate. And on that, I submit that the board is making an error in not permitting our supplemental submission to be entered into the record, in whole or in part.
Mr. Hawk, you're referring to the document that I have in front of me, which I think you faxed over.
I can't see, but if it says supplemental submission, that's the one.
Supplemental submission to the Regional Water Quality Control Board.
That's right.
Okay. You know, I've read it, and I don't need to go further than your summary where you itemize in 7 bullet points essentially what's argument in your disagreement with staff's conclusions. And so, to basically a lot of what had been raised before.
Mr. Chairman, if you had read beyond that, and this is what concerns me, I don't need to go beyond that. You do. And if you went beyond it, you would see that we comment on the changes and the basis for those changes. I'll call your particular attention to the section that deals with background. Paragraphs 41 and 42, I believe it is, I may have my numbers wrong, of the November 30th CAO, which we all saw for the first time around 5 o'clock one afternoon on November 30th, contains massive changes, and that section deals directly with it. Somebody read the preface to the COMEX letter and went through almost 6 pages with their Sharpie to get to the meat of what they thought was relevant.
That was done based on my request.
Well, I understand.
Okay. I take responsibility for that. I wanted that done. We couldn't go through this big submission and do the same thing. It was intertwined with too much non-responsive argument. You have your discussion on monitored attenuation. Now, that was something that was in the original cleanup and abatement order. The original cleanup and abatement order. I don't want to go through the whole thing, Mr. Hawk, but it contains a lot of what I feel is not responsive. So at this juncture, I'm going to deny your request to have it submitted. You can go ahead and make a pitch during your presentation. If the rest of the board feels that they need to take a look at it and maybe have it submitted and entered into the record, I'll let them participate in that decision.
We obviously disagree with that finding. I would therefore ask permission of the board for an additional 20 minutes of time for Morgan Hill so I may read those comments into the record as part of the statement. It seems that Olin has got 45 minutes. We've asked to limit it to 13 so we could keep this thing moving. In this instance, now I would request that you grant us additional time because I intend to read that into the record then, sir.
You want to read this supplemental submission into the record?
If you do not allow me to submit it as a document
with
our statement.
I'm not going to allow you to submit it.
As part of our statement in the 13 minutes we're allowed it.
That's right.
You're not allowing it at all, sir.
No, listen, Mr. Hawk, it's been identified. Everyone knows what this is. If you wish to take this up to the State Water Board on some kind of an appeal or a petition, you'll have the opportunity to do that. If you feel your client's rights are being violated somehow, you've made your point. So I would like to begin our hearing.
That's fine, Your Honor. Sorry, it's fine, Mr. Chairman. I'm more used to a courtroom. I appreciate it. I understand what our rights are, and we'll do what is necessary.
And I am, too. I understand where you're coming from, but we're not in Superior Court, and we don't have the luxury of being able to come back tomorrow or the next day and add a lot of time. This is an administrative agency. It's not the Superior Court.
I understand that.
And we do have a truncated version in procedure. We make every attempt to make it fair. We put all of our rules and guidelines into the notice hearing. And it's very, very infrequent that we come up with issues like this.
I'll
tell you what. I will give you some additional time if you can tell us exactly in here what is so critical to your client's case. I'll give you additional oral time, not now, and I'm not suggesting this comes in, but I would give you an additional 5 minutes to orally tell us what's in here that is so critical that's in response to the request for supplemental information.
Without prejudice to our rights on the basic issue of submittal, I'd be glad to do that to move this process along.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Okay. I think that takes care of that. We go now to the staff report, staff presentation.
Okay. Making our presentation today, well, first of all, I'll say we have Sheila Soderberg, who supervises our cleanup unit. We have John Robertson, who supervises our section, which includes a cleanup unit. And we have Taya Tryon, who's our hydrogeologist, assisting Hector Hernandez on the oversight of the Olin site. And then finally, getting to the presenter this morning, we have Hector Hernandez of our staff.
Well, good morning. My name is Hector Hernandez. I'm staff engineer and project manager on the Olin cleanup case. As Roger mentioned, Ted Tryon is staff hydrogeologist and provides technical support on this project. First, I'm going to start with going over some of the major milestones that have been accomplished to date since we've been involved on this project. I'll give a brief overview of the current perchlorate distribution throughout the Yggdrasil Basin. I will outline some of the cleanup requirements, some of the most significant cleanup requirements that are included in our proposed cleanup order. I will also briefly discuss some of the most significant issues that were raised by interested parties. And I will conclude with staff conclusions and recommendations. Perchlorate was first detected beneath the Olin facility in the year 2000. By 2003, Olin had detected perchlorate concentration in off-site domestic wells. Based on characterization efforts, both on-site and off-site, Olin initiated remediation activities. By 2004, Olin had completed on-site groundwater treatment system. They completed the installation of an on-site treatment system and began operating it. Additionally, by 2004, Olin had installed ion exchange systems on several off-site supply wells with elevated concentrations of perchlorate. In 2005, the Water Board issued a replacement water order which requires Olin to provide replacement water to all well owners whose wells have a concentration of perchlorate above 6 micrograms per liter. Also in 2005, the Water Board issued a cleanup and abatement order that requires Olin to complete necessary characterization activities to implement cleanup. In 2006, Olin achieved a major milestone because they completed on-site cleanup activities. This is a very significant milestone because by eliminating the source of contamination on-site in conjunction with continuous operation of the on-site groundwater treatment system, they have effectively removed the source and control further migration of contaminants to off-site areas. At this juncture, we are ready to proceed to the next step in the cleanup. We've completed, as I just summarized, on-site cleanup. The plume is being contained on-site. It's not migrating off-site. And the major characterization activities required to proceed with off-site cleanup have been completed. This figure shows the distribution of perchlorate within the intermediate aquifer zone of the Yggdrasil Basin. To orient everyone on what we're looking at, I'm sure most of you have seen this before, north is going up. The Olin site is located in the city of Morgan Hill. It's located there. San Martin is located here. City of Gilroy is here. The black dots on this slide represent the supply wells that have been monitored during the third quarter of 2007. The different colors shown on the slide depict the concentration ranges of perchlorate as delineated by Olin consultants. The red that is highlighted, the inset area here, are concentrations of perchlorate above 24.6 micrograms per liter. This is the plume core and is defined as the priority zone A within the proposed cleanup order. The orange are concentrations of perchlorate between 11.1 and 24.5, and it's defined as priority zone B. The yellow concentrations of 6.1 to 11 in its priority zone C. The green, which appears throughout the major part of the plume, are concentrations of perchlorate between 4 and 6, which is the MCL. As many of you know, a maximum contaminant level for perchlorate was recently established at 6 micrograms per liter. The extent of the plume is approximately 9.5 miles in length. That is the distance from the site on top to the southernmost boundary of the plume as delineated by Olin consultants. And it goes beyond a depth of 500 feet. The proposed cleanup order requires Olin to implement a phased cleanup strategy consisting of establishment of hydraulic control measures in the highest concentration areas, which are primarily in the red areas here, combined with monitored attenuation in all other areas, which is primarily within the areas furthest south from the site. The objective, or the primary objective of the cleanup approach, is to clean up and eliminate contaminants, clean up and control migration of contaminants in the highest concentration areas so that they don't continue to impact off-site locations. The monitored attenuation portion of this strategy depends not only on the natural attenuation processes that exist throughout the basin, but also on the effectiveness of the cleanup that will take place in the highest concentration areas. At this point, I would like to focus on the inset area and outline some of the cleanup requirements to achieve hydraulic containment. The proposed order requires Olin to establish hydraulic containment of priority zone A, which is the red shown on this slide, and priority zone B. It's important to note that the requirement to establish hydraulic containment of priority zone B is a new requirement to Olin. Staff's position is that by expanding hydraulic containment to include priority zone B will accelerate cleanup. At this point, I'm pointing to the a well location. Olin is in the process of installing a dedicated groundwater extraction well that is designed to target or hydraulically contain migration and cleanup of priority zone A. The well should be completed by the end of this month. This slide shows the distribution of perchlorate within the shallow aquifer zone. The proposed cleanup order does not require the implementation of any additional hydraulic control measures in this area, primarily because the on-site cleanup that was completed effectively in 2006, combined with the continuous operation of the on-site groundwater extraction system, have effectively removed the hotspots from this area. As we can see from this figure, the concentrations of perchlorate within this zone are less than 11 micrograms per liter. The proposed cleanup order also requires that Olin implement hydraulic containment within priority zone A of the deep aquifer zone. At this point, characterization activities concerning the deep aquifer zone are not complete, and therefore the appropriate number and location of groundwater extraction wells within this zone has not been determined. This slide shows some of the most significant tasks and milestones that Olin is required to comply with before it may initiate groundwater cleanup. Based on the complexity and size of this the complexity and size of the plumes that we're dealing with, including all the other tasks that are necessary in order to initiate hydraulic containment. We believe that the proposed implementation schedule, as outlined in the proposed cleanup order, is aggressive. Based on the schedule, Olin is required, would be required, to begin hydraulic containment of the intermediate and deep aquifer zone by November of 2009. We received several comments from interested parties that we would like to address briefly on this with this slide. The City of Morgan Hill requests that the board consider issuing a cleanup and abatement order that requires that would require Olin to provide wellhead treatment as replacement water at the city's tenant well. Staff disagrees with the city's request, primarily because Olin has achieved compliance with replacement water requirements by paying for the installation of the San Pedro well, which is a replacement well for the city's tenant well. We also received comments from Olin which indicate that they disagree with the proposed order's requirement to establish hydraulic containment in priority zone B of the intermediate aquifer. Staff position is that by expanding hydraulic containment to include priority zone B will accelerate cleanup in the intermediate aquifer. This is very important because staff is very concerned about the intermediate aquifer zone, primarily because the majority of domestic supply wells are in that zone. We also received comments concerning monitored attenuation from different parties. The majority of the comments indicate that they do not believe that monitored attenuation is an appropriate strategy. Staff is confident that monitored attenuation is an effective component of the overall remediation strategy. Based on the size of the plume, existing concentrations throughout the subbasin, the decreasing trends of perchloric concentration, particularly in the domestic supply wells, combined with the natural attenuation processes that exist throughout the basin, all these factors combined with the fact that Olin will be establishing hydraulic containment, effective hydraulic containment, within the higher concentration areas, provides assurance that monitored attenuation is an effective strategy and appropriate in this situation. To ensure that monitored attenuation will be effective, the proposed order requires Olin to establish a performance monitoring program and a remedial contingency plan. What this means is essentially that the board and Olin will continuously review the effectiveness or evaluate the effectiveness of the cleanup strategy to determine whether or not concentrations are decreasing at acceptable rates and within the acceptable time frames. If that does not occur, then Olin would be required to implement its contingency plan, which may include the installation of additional extraction wells if necessary.
A question for you.
Yes.
To date, has there been enough time gone by with monitoring for us to know whether monitored attenuation is to be expected in those groundwater conditions?
Based on our review of groundwater monitoring data from the domestic supply wells, there is a decreasing trend, so the answer is yes.
And do we know what that is a result of? And the question really is, in your explanation or definition of monitored attenuation, there's about 6 or 7 factors that could give rise to that. One is a chemical breakdown, one is just simply dispersion or dilution. So do you have any idea what is taking place within this plume?
For the most part, I think at this point, without having established hydraulic containment in the specifically the intermediate aquifer zone, the main processes in place would be attenuation due to the recharge ponds that are operated by the water district, precipitation, the huge flux of water that goes through that sub-basin. Those are all...
So dilution.
Dilution.
Okay. Does perchlorate break down?
Perchlorate can break down in anaerobic conditions, and the majority of the Yaga sub-basin is aerobic conditions, so the predominant monitored attenuation processes that occur to decrease the perchlorate concentrations are physical, such as dilution, dispersion.
Okay. All right.
Mr. Chair.
Question.
Dr. Hunter.
Chair. Regarding the comments on monitored attenuation, is there any proposed alternative condition that came out of that grouping of interested parties that they would like to see as a measure if they find monitoring monitored attenuation is not adequate?
A majority of the interested parties would like to see an expansion of more extraction wells, so more pump and treat throughout the sub-basin.
And any other concerns about water supply in terms of ongoing or expanding the bottled water or any other measures?
Majority of the interested parties, specifically the individuals that are receiving bottled water, are concerned that they will be having to deal with the bottled water for a long period of time and lifting the heavy bottles of water, and that's their main concern, is the length of time.
Okay, thanks.
Mr. Shallcross.
Yeah, I'd like to just take a step back, and maybe you're going to get to this at some point, but I'd like to just have you explain a little bit about monitored attenuation. The way it's presented here, it's presented in a way as if it were a process that actually does something, that actually takes perchlorate out of the system. And from what I understand, it's just a monitoring and looking and seeing if the perchlorate's going away for one reason or another. At one point in your comments, you said you were going to see if the monitored attenuation process works. Well, what is that process? And how does it not work?
The monitored attenuation process is allowing natural processes such as dilution and dispersion of the plume, thereby reducing the concentrations of perchlorate through those processes, uh-huh. and monitoring them to make sure that those decreasing trends do continue to occur.
So it's actually just a monitoring program. How is it different than a monitoring program is what I'm saying?
There are certain parameters that need to be analyzed in just perchlorate to...
Okay, but the monitored attenuation process, if it is a process, doesn't actually take any perchlorate out.
Right,
does
correct. It is essentially monitoring to make sure the
so perchlorate... So it's just watching and seeing if it goes up or down, right?
And making sure it keeps going down, yes.
And well, making sure it keeps going down, but the monitoring itself doesn't affect that, right?
No, but one of the key things that we need to keep in mind is that monitoring attenuation is not deemed appropriate in all situations. A lot of the decision, well, most a lot of the considerations in determining whether or not monitoring attenuation is appropriate depends on the site-specific conditions. The proposed strategy to use monitored attenuation includes several conditions that require the discharger to implement an effective performance monitoring program to be able to see whether or not these decreases are increasing at the rate that they're expected. Monitored attenuation alone is not going to achieve cleanup requirements. It is a component of the overall cleanup strategy, which includes the major part of this, in addition to the natural attenuation processes that exist, is effective plume containment. Olin is required to proceed with to evaluate the effectiveness of the entire strategies in strict accordance with US EPA protocol.
So Is monitoring attenuation a term of art in the industry, water cleanup industry, as opposed to monitoring? A monitoring program is different than monitoring attenuation?
It's a lot more effective and dedicated. It's more focused on the actual wells.
Okay, so that has to do with the monitoring and the level of monitoring and what you're looking at. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with cleaning up the water.
Yeah, the actual monitor attenuation process,
yes,
is not like pump and treat where you're taking it out of the ground.
Thank you. I mean, and a lot of the language going on here, there's an implication that it somehow is helping take perchlorate out of the groundwater, and I'm a little concerned that some folks might think that it's actually a remediation tool, when in fact it's merely a monitoring tool to see, as far as I can see, to see if your remediation, whether it's through nature or through extraction wells, is working or not. So really, it's a monitoring program to see if your remediation is working, right?
Right. Depends.
Okay. And I just want to make that clear, because a lot of what's talked about in here and the way it's presented, it may seem to some folks that it's actually doing something to clean up groundwater, and it's not. Mm-hmm. It's merely a monitoring tool. Am I right or not?
You're right.
Okay, am I beating a dead horse here?
Yeah, it's
okay.
Dead. Zone D.
Zone B?
Zone D. D,
oh, D.
D as in David. Has the lowest levels of perchlorate. You're going to do monitored attenuation of Zone D.
Yes.
No active remediation. You're going to impose containment. Is that correct for Zone D?
C,
right? No.
No.
Containment is required for Zone A the deep aquifer zone, and Zone A and B in the intermediate aquifer zone.
Right, right. And I am thinking about Zone D, which is the biggest
the
piece
green,
that goes all
yes.
the way down, the light green.
Mm-hmm.
What is your plan for removing perchlorate from that zone?
Allowing the natural processes which are currently occurring, the influx of water that's diluting the plume, to continue to proceed until eventually we'll have non-detect concentrations of perchlorate.
And is that the trend you're seeing now?
Right. And for example, in the first quarter of 2004, there were 190 wells that were above 6. During the third quarter of 2007, there were 37 wells that were above 6.
And out of those 37 wells, I believe that all the wells with concentrations above 7.9 micrograms per liter are fitted with ion exchange systems. So in addition to, you know, helping clean up the basin to some degree, Olin is also providing those well owners with replacement water.
Okay. Any other board questions?
Just one quick one.
Go ahead.
And if someone moves into the area or decides that they want to put in a new well, like into Zone A in the intermediate, will Olin then have to provide cleanup?
Yes.
Into the future, if someone
yes.
decides to drill a well?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
The Department of Environmental Health oversees new wells, and
uh-huh.
they have a requirement that anybody installing a well in the Yaga subbasin needs to sample for perchlorate. So if there is a detection of perchlorate, then Olin gets involved immediately.
Okay, thanks.
I do have one quick question.
Okay.
I'm looking at the report that was prepared on November 19th, so the original blue report that I received, and on page 8, there's a note that, and this is commenting on the trends, that of the wells, or of the wells that were receiving bottled water and then that was terminated, and the number there is 551 wells, 27 of those wells have had bottled water reinstated. Can you comment on that?
Sure. As you know, bottled water is supplied to people that have had perchlorate detections above 6, if they demonstrate with quarterly monitoring, if they show that there's 4 consecutive quarters with perchlorate less than 6 parts per billion, then in accordance with the State Water Board order, they're allowed to terminate bottled water. However, upon termination of the bottled water, there are specific monitoring requirements in place. And during that monitoring, for example, if the well at termination has a 5 parts per billion or higher, they're required to sample bimonthly. And if during that time, after bottled water is terminated and during this subsequent monitoring, the detection goes above 6 again, they're required to provide bottled water for an additional year. And that's what the 27 is. They were at once terminated, and then they jumped above 6, and they had to be reinstated.
Right. So the question is, why is it jumping above 6? If we're looking at trends that are generally reducing, then what's going on in that? And where do you know, can you tell me where that area is?
Right. They're spread throughout the plume, the green area, and it depends on the natural variability. Sometimes water concentrations or perchlorate concentrations go up and down based on seasonal variations and just changes over time. So, for example, they might have had perchlorate at 5.9 for 4 consecutive quarters, and then the next sample went to 6.1. That constitutes reinstatement of bottled water.
I think if I were one of those residents and it was riding that close to the line, 5.9 would be just under the limit, health concerns of that would be long-term in nature, and it would take, and how many periods of monitoring does it take before it gets considered to be on the uptrend again, before water gets reinstated? I mean, it just seems like there should be a little more. I know the State Water Board put this order in place of 3 consecutive periods, but I'm just really concerned that we're asking folks to live with statistics that really don't translate to protecting their long-term health concerns. Is there any dimension of this that's going to be better dealt with in the way that this is going to get decided today?
Well, one of the requirements of the proposed cleanup order is that Olin must equip all domestic supply wells that have a concentration above 7.9 micrograms per liter with ion exchange. Now, the reason that that is a requirement is to address some of these potential fluctuations in concentrations. At this point, all wells above 7.9 are equipped with ion exchange, but in the event that a well goes that does not have ion exchange, it goes above that concentration, then Olin would be required to fit that well with ion exchange. It doesn't take care of the impacts, but public health is a very big concern of everyone, in particular the affected well owners, and we're very aware of their concerns. That is one of the reasons that we I don't think we've missed a perchlorate meeting in the last 2 years since we've been involved, for that very same reason, to address the main issue at those PCAG meetings is their water supply and potential fluctuations, and how are we going to deal with that? And
Mr. Chair,
yes.
To get back to your question, I think there's a little clarification that might be available. To qualify for Olin to say that a well qualifies for ceasing the replacement water, they have to have 4 consecutive quarters.
Yes.
What happens to re-trigger replacement water? What kind of result do they have
one
to
detection.
Have? And for
just one
for
detection.
One detection.
Above 6 would require 4 more quarters of bottled water.
Right. And I don't think that was clear before. It's not an equal standard. It's a standard that we developed in response to the State Board's ruling on the petition, and it is deliberately geared towards protecting the water supply.
Okay, why don't we have staff continue with their presentation, and then we'll have time, more time for questions later. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I've reached our conclusions and recommendations. Based on all the available information concerning this site, particularly the extent of the plume, the complexity involved, and all the tasks required in the proposed cleanup order, staff's position is that the cleanup requirements and the implementation schedule that are outlined in the proposed cleanup order are aggressive, reasonable, and appropriate. We understand that there are two designated parties that will be presenting information and comments or evidence during this hearing, so staff will make a final recommendations after the board has considered all comments and evidence provided by those designated parties.
Okay, thank you. Any further board questions or comments?
It's not just designated parties. We have other folks who will be making comments, and we'll take those into consideration as well. Right. If I can mention one other, a couple other logistic items that I forgot to point out. When the board asks questions, we stop the clock, and both for the questions and for the answers, we'll do the same thing as far as the time limits that we have for the for everyone. And then also over here we have a court reporter who is actually hired by Olin, I believe. Is that correct? Right. And her name is Lisa Andrews, and I imagine she has a card over there if any of you need to contact her.
Who's next, Laura?
Yeah, and we will be having to break at some point, at a convenient point here, for lunch as well as for closed session. So we'll let you know what the timing is for that.
I have a question.
Yes.
Okay, after you get four consecutive quarters below six, you get off of bottled water and you go. Who's responsible, or how do they monitor that? Do they continue the monitoring every quarter after that for a period of time?
They have certain frequencies that they need to monitor on, depending on what the last sample result was at the time of bottled water termination.
And who, when you say they, who's responsible for that?
Olin.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, Dr. Hunter.
I'm sorry, I do have one more question, and I think it's appropriate to bring it up now. I want to know, are we going to hear more about the San Pedro well and how that well performed relative to what it was intended to do and what the status of the San Pedro well is now?
I believe that one of the designated parties, City of Morgan Hill, is going to speak specifically on that issue.
Okay. So I'll hold my questions for that.
Well, we did receive information responding to our
The San Pedro
request.
Well does produce more water than the Tennant well.
Okay. That wasn't clear to me.
It wasn't clear to me, and that's mm-hmm. why I had asked for additional information.
Okay.
But it does outproduce the Tennant well.
Okay.
But I think there's another issue rolled into that,
mm-hmm.
which is parallel with it, and that is somewhat unresolved. And that is the city wants us to they want to be able to have Olin pay for cleaning Tennant well water, paid for by Olin.
Correct.
So yeah. That, in my mind, hasn't been resolved.
I understand.
So
yeah.
We're going to get into that, I think.
Okay.
How
Thank
far
you.
Is the San Pedro well away from the Tennant well?
I can show you a map. The Tennant well is located here near the Olin site, and the San Pedro well is located right there.
And what's that distance?
It says 2,000 feet up there.
It's okay. Probably close to a mile, a little over a mile.
It's
about a mile.
About a mile.
And a little over a mile.
Are they in the same depth Are they in the intermediate?
I know it's screened similar to Nordstrom, so it is pulling out of the intermediate and deep aquifer.
So the San Pedro well replaces the Tennant well?
Correct.
And it makes more water? So does it cost the city any more to get that water into the system at that point for distribution than it did it to get it into the system at Tennant?
I can't answer that question.
All right.
Okay. Mr. Briggs, we have Olin's presentation.
Yes.
And how much time? 45 minutes?
45 minutes.
And
what's that?
Okay.
Until 30.
And I would give Olin some additional time because I gave some additional time to the city if Olin feels it wants to comment. Or I'll just give you that additional time. You can use it any way you want. How about that?
Mr. Chairman, Randy Visser, representing
yes.
Olin Environmental Council. I just wanted to...
Can you go
Mr.
to the podium,
Mr. Visser, you need to come to a mic.
Excuse me. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, board members. I just wanted to clarify one thing. Olin, when it makes its presentation, has been allotted 45 minutes, as you know. They were going to split that time, spend 30 to 35 minutes on the main presentation in chief, and then reserve the rest of the time till the end after others have commented. So to the extent it affects your lunch break, I just wanted you to know that.
We do have a closed session that we've got to get to, and we can do that, Michael, between
12
and 1:30. So I would like to, that's an hour and a half period. So I would like to get through your present, well, the 30 minutes?
Yeah.
Yeah, at least certainly get through that.
Good morning, still, for a little bit. My name is David Scher, and I work for Olin in the capacity of the Director of Environmental Remediation. And there are two others here on behalf of Olin this morning. Mr. Visser with Shepard Mullen introduced himself, and Mr. Michael Taraski with MacTech Engineering and Environmental Consulting is here as well. And Mr. Taraski will be doing the bulk of the technical presentation this morning. I'd like to thank the board for the opportunity to speak, and especially for granting us the requested additional time. We're going to spend it not in just making points, but in presenting the science that supports the conclusions and the statements that we're going to make today. And as Randy pointed out, we're going to try to use a half an hour now and then just reserve some time, if as necessary, to address other comments.
And are you guys keeping track of that time, or do you want us to do that, 30 minutes?
We are.
Well, we're keeping track of it, but I mean, I'm just letting it start at 45 minutes and running down.
That's fine.
Okay.
I would like to thank the board staff. For years now, they have worked very diligently and very hard, and I think that's evident in the CAO and in the technical responses that they give. So I'd like to thank you guys. Our review of the initial CAO was generally very positive. We're, of course, going to make comments about sections and aspects of it that we disagree with. That's one of the main purposes here, but it shouldn't go unspoken that, in general, it's consistent with all the work that had led up to the CAO. The big surprise for us, and we're going to spend a bit of time on it today, was the addition of Priority Zone B. The original CAO did not entertain that, as did the abundant number of technical reports with approvals that had preceded the this hearing. Let's see. Press that. To jump into it, and I'm not going to read you this slide, but these are the topics that we'll be focusing on today. That we have proposed and in fact have begun implementing to the point where the extraction well is substantially complete as we speak. The cleanup plan, I mentioned we're going to talk about Predator Zone B, and then the schedule, as Mr. Hernandez indicated, was aggressive. It is, and we're obligated to point out where right now we think that it's unrealistic. And then for the record, really, we're going to just state our disagreement with the alternate cleanup level as presented in the cleanup and abatement order, and we'll address the northeast area. With regard to the process, I'm not going to read you this slide, but this has been a very, out of necessity, laborious process. We have followed it, to use Hector's word, aggressively. These are just the summary documents that present a tremendous amount of technical work product that has gone into getting us to where we are today. As you note, as we've proceeded, the board has worked hard and has approved and conditionally approved documents to date. The plume migration control feasibility study, the revised cleanup FS, the plume migration control work plan, which had taken, you know, months and over a year to get us to where we are today, were all specific to Priority Zone B, and you know, we've worked in concert to get here. Monitoring, we have a large database. We have a lot of monitoring that's been performed, and that does tell us certain things about things like the ongoing attenuation, and Mike is going to address that also. And then just to put it in perspective, excuse me, because I know that you hear matters of varying complexity, to get us where we are today, from about 2000, we have expended $34 million on technical resources, accumulating the science necessary to make these decisions. And this 170,000 technical man hours was on the slide, but if you're like me and have a hard time figuring out what that translates to, that's about equivalent to asking Mr. Trasky here to work for 82 years continuously with no vacations or holidays on this project. So obviously there are a tremendous number of other technical professionals that have supported the project. Mike?
And on that dubious note, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and Water Board. I'm going to talk a little bit about the technical aspects of the current cleanup plan and more or less how we got to where we are today, as well as how we're looking forward to cleaning this plume up in the future. And I'm aware of the incentive of the empty stomach, so I'm going to try to keep this at a pretty good pace. This slide really talks about the revised cleanup feasibility study that was submitted in December of 2006, and it was in that document that we screened a number of appropriate remedial technologies. The current cleanup plan really consists of two main elements, and that's hydraulic control of Priority Zone A, as well as monitored attenuation of groundwater downgradient. And I'll be talking about both of those elements further on. It's also important to note, though, that a number of interim actions have already been implemented, including replacement water for domestic well users, well water users, the replacement municipal well, and ion exchange systems. That abatement action, a collective abatement action, has led to the fact that no one's drinking any perchlorate greater than the public health goal at this point. However, we're proceeding with cleanup, and that's to drop concentrations to below the now MCL, which is equal to the public health goal. Again, the current plan, which is consistent with the original draft cleanup and abatement order, calls for hydraulic control of Priority Zone A. And I just wanted to take a moment here to point out that to install an extraction well appropriately at the right location, the right depth, it really requires a lot of knowledge about the hydrogeology. And in this basin, there's a lot of complex geology, a lot of pumping in the area. It's a very large area. And like David just said, we've spent a long time and a lot of effort in acquiring that knowledge. With respect to the intermediate aquifer, the characterization efforts are complete. We're prepared to proceed with hydraulic capture priority zone A. With the deep aquifer, it's not complete. It's ongoing. We're in the process, as I speak, of continuing that, and that touches on some of the schedule issues that we have that we'll talk about later as well. I also just wanted to point out that the placement of an extraction well is much more than just installing a new well. If you increase the amount of water that's being pumped, that translates to significant engineering details that need, complete engineering, re-engineering that needs to be considered as far as conveyance, treatment, and if the volume of water increases enough, possibly how you dispose of all that treated water. The second aspect of the program is, as we've discussed, the monitored attenuation, and there have been a lot of questions about how monitored attenuation could or should be applied for this program. One really important element that I want to point out is that for monitored attenuation to really succeed, it requires source remediation or source removal. And we've already accomplished that with the on-site treatment system of groundwater, which was initiated in March 2004, but also with soil and vadose zone remediation, where the source removal has largely occurred out on the site. The hydraulic control that we're proposing at this point is really an extension of that system. We alluded to this before, and I'm going to demonstrate in the next few slides that we have observed the effects of attenuation processes throughout this basin, both locally and throughout the region. Taya mentioned earlier that as of in third quarter 2007, there were 37 wells that exceeded the MCL. We have 48 here because this is of most recent sampling, so there's a little bit of a discrepancy there. But all that means is there was about 11 wells that we didn't actually sample in third quarter. So we're presenting the conservative estimate. But nonetheless, I want to demonstrate that graphically. This slide shows all the wells in the basin that have been sampled to date. And for anybody in the audience who's a real quick counter, you can corroborate the number, but there's about 1,500 wells there, maybe a little bit more. These are sampled to date from the very northern part of the basin all the way down to the south, almost 10 miles away. In first quarter 2004, there were 190 wells as of that time that had exceeded the public health goal of 6 part per billion. Most recently, in the last quarter that was published, we now have fewer than 50 wells. And we wanted to make this point because there may be some confusion about how many wells are really impacted with respect to the public health goal. So there's been a dramatic decline in the number of wells over time, and we attribute this to the attenuation processes that are ongoing, that are already occurring throughout the sub-basin. Now, to look at that a different way, this is pretty much the same information. On the top chart, we have the number of wells each quarter, or as of each quarter, that exceeded the public health goal of 6. And again, we start with almost 200 wells to the left, and we see a very clear trend downward over time until we're now less than 50 wells as of third quarter 07. The second chart at the bottom is sort of a corollary to that, and that's the number of wells that have dropped to below the detection level, which is 4 part per billion over time. And we see just the opposite trend there, which is also very positive evidence for attenuation processes. So together, we're really seeing a lot of evidence for attenuation.
Question.
Yes.
Are these domestic wells all taking water from the intermediate aquifer?
For the most part, yes. The intermediate aquifer is by far the predominant aquifer relied upon for domestic wells.
Do any of the domestic wells get into the deep aquifer?
There are a few, relatively few, however, from a well installation pragmatism. There's a lot of good water at about 100 feet to 200 feet. There's really not much need for a well driller for a typical household to drill any deeper. Mm. So if for no other reason, that's where most of the wells have been installed. There are a few wells that are cross-screened into the deep, but those are relatively few.
And any into the shallow aquifer?
There may be a handful, but generally that would not be consistent with the water quality standards or the well installation standards, either for the state or the water district. Shallow water is generally most vulnerable to surface contamination from, you know, okay. fertilizer application, that sort of thing.
Okay. Go ahead.
Could you go back two slides to the, I guess, okay, first order. And these wells had what now?
These were the wells that, as of first quarter 2004, had perchlorate at a concentration greater than 6.
Okay. Thank you. And then I had a question on Zone A. That's everywhere that, since we're talking about Zone A, I sort of want to get an idea of why Zone A is Zone A. So everything that's 2.4, 2.5 parts per billion and higher, right?
Correct.
So I guess my question is, what is the significance of 224.5 parts per billion? I mean, why does that become Zone A?
Why 24.5? Why not something else? Well, and I've got a few slides to look at that graphically, okay. So I can maybe address that when I get to that slide.
Go ahead.
Good? Okay. Another way of looking at the attenuation, the evidence of attenuation processes, is with respect to the replacement water program itself. We have two tables here. The first is referring to the number of wells where the replacement water program applied in terms of the number of wells and also in the number of water accounts. And even though bottled water began to be provided to the domestic well owners in 2002, the state board order came out in second quarter 2005. At that point, there were 662 wells that required replacement water, and that had an associated 914 accounts. And the discrepancy is because some wells have multiple users. As of third quarter 2007, there are only 111 wells, so we've lost 551 wells that no longer require bottled water, and there's 751 wells of fewer accounts most recently compared to 2005. Similarly, because the initial frequency is quarterly, we have the same number of quarterly monitored wells decline. But the last line is a really important one, and that's there are almost 300 wells that, per the rules of that state board order, no longer require monitoring at any frequency. And what that means is that the concentrations have dropped to below 6 for a long enough period of time that they're good, they're done. And again, that's more evidence of attenuation. This is another take on what we've seen in terms of attenuation. What we have here is a time concentration plot for three different monitoring wells. These are located downgrading of the on-site treatment system. Again, the on-site treatment system began operating in March 2004. That's shown as the blue line on these charts. And the chart on the left shows a monitoring well immediately down gradient in the shallow aquifer. The chart in the center shows the same a monitoring well also immediately down gradient, but in the intermediate aquifer. And what you can see here is, upon pumping and treating the on-site and capturing that groundwater, we see an immediate decline in concentration, and it's particularly significant in the center chart. This is the combination of hydraulic control of a higher concentration and attenuation down gradient, where clean recharge is physically attenuating the perchlorate concentrations. We wanted to also point out, though, that this is not limited to the immediate vicinity of the extraction wells. The first two wells, monitoring wells, are only 50 feet to the south. The third chart really, it shows a monitoring well that was installed about a year and a half afterwards, almost a quarter mile down gradient. And there also we see a decline in concentrations that clearly relates to the hydraulic capture and attenuation.
Do you have a map that shows the location of these wells?
I can point out
with respect to the tenant well or the Olin facility.
Sure. Yeah, I have another map. I can point out these locations.
Okay.
To summarize, then, the current plan, which again is consistent with the original cleanup and abatement order, it is thorough, it is protective and compliant with the protocol and the guidance, particularly for monitored attenuation. But I also wanted to point out that in that plan, there is contains a performance monitoring plan. And this was a question that was perhaps, I think, touched on earlier. That performance monitoring plan, it very much deals not only with the frequency of the sampling and what wells are sampled and what analytes are sampled for, but it really provides the data that once evaluated could potentially trigger the contingency plan, which is another element of this cleanup plan. And that contingency plan contains triggers that would, if needed, increase the amount of monitoring or remediation. So those are really two important additional elements. Regarding the interim actions that have already been implemented, I just want to reiterate that in 2002, Olin replaced the Tennant well with the San Pedro well. And obviously there's been some questions regarding that issue. Perhaps we need to talk about that a little bit more. I suspect we will. But that was a really important early on interim action that has addressed the issue of the Tennant well as an interim action. The replacement water program, again, began in 2002 with bottled water to domestic wells. Subsequent to that, in 2003, Olin began installing ion exchange systems, both on a large scale for the West San Martin Water Works and the San Martin County Water District. I always get that balled up. And then in addition to that, 15 domestic scale ion exchange systems. And then again, as of third quarter, we've seen a significant decline in the number of wells exceeding the MCL. The next few slides really detail our concerns about the new cleanup and abatement order that now includes priority zone B. Again, the cleanup order, the current cleanup plan, calls for priority zone A hydraulic control, and that's an effective approach. And this touches on the question about 24.5. The plume core is what's supporting the priority zone B concentrations, if you will. In other words, once you remove the plume core, the other surrounding area, the groundwater surrounding that area with other high concentrations will dissipate, will attenuate. It's that effect that we've already seen with the on-site hydraulic capture that we expect on this larger expanded scale to include priority zone A will have the exact same effect, the desired effect to drop concentrations to below the MCL down gradient. And for that reason, at this point, particularly since there's already a contingency plan in place, it's premature and inappropriate to change the remediation design now. Essentially, we're switching horses midstream. We've been in process of implementing priority zone A capture for this entire past year. The feasibility study was prepared last December. March 29, we received conditional approval of the priority zone A capture by the Water Board. They also approved the extraction well location this past October. And as of right now, we've got an extraction well that's substantially complete. Our concern is that by increasing the requirement to hydraulically capture priority zone B, we would be potentially talking about a significant increase in the volume of water that would require capture. And in this case, we're talking about almost tripling the volume, so from about 2 million gallons to 5.5 million gallons. And that's where our concerns on the engineering side really come into play. That's a lot more water to not only convey, but also treat, not only to capture, but to convey, to treat, and then dispose of once it's been treated. So it raises a lot of questions.